this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frick on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the master of pros, the one who knows, the great Casey Johnson on the line. How you doing, Casey?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Living the dream. Living the dream. I'm excited. Before we get started with basketball talk, I got to know, what are you listening to? You have a great taste in music. What's on in your iPod these days, or your iPhone?
my iPod. Yeah, there's so much good music out there. Friends, band, local, Facts, F-A-C-S, just has a new album coming out next month. Their first record, Negative Houses, was a good one for me. I still do the singer-songwriter thing, so I've been listening to this guy named Sean Rowe a little bit. Been digging Proto Martyr throughout their career, and Big Thief as a recent fave. They've got a new record coming out in May, so a lot of good music out there always.
That's awesome. I got to check all those out. Pete Yorn, you ever listen to Pete Yorn, singer-songwriter?
I have heard Pete Yorn, but I do not actively seek out Pete Yorn. Should I?
I'm going to make it my mission in life then, so I hope you either just delete these emails that come across the next few weeks or check it out, because this guy, he's great. He's been around for a while now, but about 20 years or so, but he's one of the few guys I really love and respect in the singer-songwriter genre. So anyhow, we digress. Let's get to the beloved Bull. And the first question I have for you, I thought the handling of Parker during Boylan's first month was just catastrophic for the Bulls. I thought it was terrible what they did. I thought your article, suspiciously, also shortly thereafter, led to a change in how he was being utilized. I think he came out of hibernation after that article came out, which kind of highlighted the mistakes, I think, that were... You did a great job in that article. Was the impetus behind that decision to bench him, was that Boylan's, or do you think it was the front office?
No, it was clearly Jim Boylan's, and he was very transparent and above board about his reasons for doing so, which is how Jim operates with every decision he makes. He is very upfront with the media, very honest with the media, which we appreciate. And he cited that he didn't think that Jabari's practice habits and effort at the defensive end were up to par, and he also kind of felt that Jabari wasn't honoring the essence of the team, that he was kind of putting himself ahead of the team. So, you know, those are pretty damning indictments and pretty strong stuff, and it took a while for Jabari to extricate himself from that doghouse, and then when he did re-enter the rotation before he was traded, he did what he always does, which is scored a pretty decent clip. He's a very gifted offensive player. So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the article I wrote. I first talked to Jabari alone in Toronto in late December and kind of gave him a platform to address his benching. And then I don't often write columns with my opinion because I'm more of a traditional beat writer. But I think I snapped on that West Coast trip watching some second unit of Shaquille Harrison, Ryan Archidiakono, Antonio Blakeney. I just couldn't take it anymore. So I did write a personal piece saying that I felt that, you know, Jabari should be freed from the doghouse. What always puzzled me about that story from the jump was, you know, the Bulls knew exactly who they were signing and what they were getting. And they addressed it. Management said, we're just trying to accumulate athletes and talent and see what fits and what sticks. So he's clearly one of your top five talented players on the roster, defensive deficiencies, you know, included. So I just didn't ever understand why they strayed from the plan. That was what was confusing to me.
I agree 100%. I thought he was playing actually pretty well in the last days of Hoiberg. You know, he put up a nice string of 20, almost 20 points, 9 rebounds consistently. He goes to the bench, and when he finally gets freed from that, he played, I thought, very well before he was traded. And my question was, you know, other teams, players around the league notice that. Do you think that damaged the reputation of the Bulls org, the handling of Parker? Do you think that damaged it more, or do you think it was Boylan's first week with the wind sprints and the near mutiny in practice after the Boston loss?
Well, I can't speak to the whether or not the depth of it, whether it damaged the reputation of the organization. People from other teams, or executives or coaches or players from other teams that I know don't really, when I talk to them about those situations, that they don't address stuff like that. What I will say is that in both situations, they created notice around the league. I mean, I actually invariably, when I would be traveling, when Jabari was out of the rotation, I'd get to an arena and someone I would know from the other opponent that night would say, what's up with Jabari? Why is he playing? I mean, it just, they were puzzled by it. And I tell them the reasons. And look, I can have that opinion. That doesn't mean that I'm right and Jim's wrong. Jim was very steadfast with that belief. He felt that when he took over, he had to hold players accountable. He didn't feel like Jabari was competing at the level that he needed to in practice. And for a guy who's trying to set and establish a culture, if that's what he believes, and he stays true to that belief, God bless him. I just felt that, like I said, when you signed him, you knew what you were getting, and it just puzzled me when he's that talented that he wasn't playing. And then as far as Jim's first week, obviously that drew national attention around the league. It's just kind of, eyebrow-raising stuff. I will say that stuff always seemed crazier from the outside than it was on the inside. We went to Mexico City shortly after that trip, and the sense around that team coming out of that team meeting was just that the entire team, even the most disgruntled people, were in a better place. Mm. Now, obviously, then the losing kind of exacerbated things because they had that rough stretch in January, but I think everyone would agree things have kind of calmed down to this point, and Jim's also growing and settling into his role.
It sounds like the team recovered then. One of the questions I had is in-season conditioning that unusual? Was this something that you rarely see from an NBA coach in your years of covering the league?
Well, yes, to answer your question, most conditioning tapers off throughout the season just because the wear and tear of the season is so intense. That said, most teams, will occasionally address conditioning or have guys who aren't playing heavy minutes run extra or do what have you. The push-ups and the public disclosure of the push-ups was something I'd never really come across. I will say, having witnessed it, well, first of all, I think it's died down. For the most part, and when it is used now, it's used kind of in a team bonding, more lighthearted manner. And I will say, I haven't witnessed them a lot because practices are closed to us. But from all accounts, Jim gets right down there and does it with his players. So it's not like he's running around like a crazy drill sergeant. He's down there doing it with the players and having fun. I think it's kind of become like a team bonding thing, but. No, that was certainly something I had not experienced much to that point in my career.
So that's hilarious. So Jim's actually doing the push-ups, which is almost frightening because he doesn't seem to be in the best of shape.
No, he's in good shape, man. He's 53. Really? He gets after it. He's in good shape, man. He's a former football guy. Maybe you didn't know. He likes to talk about toughness. He's a former football guy.
He's got spirit. I got it. Otto Porter Jr., the team has obviously played so much better since that acquisition. I'd like to get your opinion. First of all, were you in favor of that acquisition? I don't know how you felt about Portis, who I felt, nice guy, nice player, but there's no room for him on this team when we got a 4-5 set for the next decade. What was your opinion on that acquisition, and what has impressed you most about Otto Porter Jr.?
Yeah, my initial reaction was just kind of, meh. I didn't really know what to make of it because I actually was a pretty big Portis fan. I thought he, not only for what he gave you on the court, I also thought he represented kind of what you're talking about is, work hard, intensity, owning bulls across your chest, being loyal to the franchise. He was symbolic to me a little bit. I'm not overstating his value or what he is as a player. I just thought he definitely filled a need, you know, reliable score off the bench. I also liked how he accepted whatever role you gave him, similar to a Taj Gibson score, you know, I'm sorry, start, come off the bench, he still produced. So I actually was a pretty big Portis fan. So my initial reaction was just kind of meh. I'll be honest, if you asked me to lean one way or the other, I was leaning towards I didn't like it. I've been quickly proven to be an idiot, like I often am, because, you know, it's clear from, like you said, watching any game that Porter is exactly what this team needed. He's just a stabilizing presence at both ends. Very veteran, very, you know, Scott Brooks called him not low maintenance, no maintenance. I mean, he's just a basketball player. You can plug him into any team and he'll make that team better because he's versatile at both ends. He's got positional size. He knows how to play. He knows when to shoot. He knows when to pass. He can guard multiple positions. So, I never got, even when I was kind of trending kind of down in the initial moments after the trade, I never got hung up on the contract. The contract is a contract, you know. You got to look past that. It's what he does on the court. Clearly, he's not a $28 million a year player, okay? Yeah. That's not his fault he got that deal. God bless him that he got it. You always have to look, in my opinion, you always have to look past money and look at production on the court. So, look, he's a starting small forward. He's locked in now for two more years. From my seat, you've got four starters nailed now. You've got, you know, two through five nailed. Obviously, the Chris Dunn situation is perplexing and something I think they'll address in the off season. But, you know, with Levine, Porter, Markkanen, and Carter, I think you've got four starters nailed now.
Amen. And that, speaking of Dunn, is he done? I mean, I keep on hearing whispers there's off-the-court issues. I think it's highly suspicious that he had a migraine after the Boston game where he spent the, you know, fourth quarter glued to the bench. And I kind of feel that the Bulls must sign a free agent point guard in the offseason, whether it's Rubio, Beverly, or Collison. So, you know, number one, do you feel it's more likely they're going to trade him or sign a free agent to challenge him? And number two, what free agent point guards do you like that are going to be available this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to how they're going to address the point guard situation. I just know they're going to address the point guard situation. Obviously, if they get a extremely high pick, Morant would probably be in their realm of possibility. And you know, in lieu of that, it is a pretty deep point guard free agent pool. So as far as what is going to be Dunn's role moving forward, I personally can't see how much trade value he would have individually. I mean, you're talking about a guy who then would be going to his third team at the age of 25 as a former number five overall pick who has not lived up to that billing. Mm-hmm. I just don't see a one-for-one that's going to bring you back equal value. Now, that said, I do think it will be a hard sell, you know, anointing him as part of your future core and then asking him to take a bench role. But he is under contract. He's on a value contract in his rookie deal. I personally would keep him on a roster and say, look, you're coming off the bench. I think he'd be a spectacular bench player because of his defensive intensity and his ability to play and pick and roll. I think he'd be a fantastic reserve, and I think he'd have a long career in that. I do. Again, I think it'd be a hard sell, but – you know, I think you got to play hardball with them. So, the free agent pool, like I said, the deep one, I don't personally have any, I don't think any of them are perfect. I think a lot of them probably fit in some ways. I think, you know, I'm not trying to evade the answer. What I would say is, I think you set a number that works with the cap space that you're working with, and you throw it out there to all of them, and whichever one takes it, not all of them, but, you know, the names you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Whichever one takes it, you just don't budge off that number.
Rubio, Beverly, Collison, are those three, which one do you like the best, or is there any other name that you like to see added?
You talked about my Jabari column, but you didn't mention my Derrick Rose column.
Oh,
come on, man.
I love that, too, but I don't want to be inundated with emails that I'm a, you know, Rose homer, and I'm sure you got some.
I got kind of crushed for that one, but anyway. It was. I actually think Derek would fit. I do think it would be. I think it's a long shot, but I think he would fit. Of those three, I would pick of those three. I think all of them fit in some ways, not all ways. Of those three, I would pick Collison. So Beverly to me doesn't shoot it well enough. What you need is you need a guy. I was actually thinking about this before I got on the horn with you here. There are so many players out there that would fit, but you know, in a weird way, who would fit perfectly, and he's not a free agent, and he is on a long-term rookie deal with the Mavericks. Jalen Brunson would fit perfectly. You need a guy who just plays defense, distributes the ball, doesn't need plays called for him, and knocks down open three-pointer. That's exactly what you need.
Right.
In a weird way, I mean, Archie Diacono obviously is not a lead NBA player and has had some struggles this year. In a weird kind of way, Archie Diacono now fits better with that first unit than Dunn, because Dunn needs the ball in his hands and he doesn't get to the rim and finish or shoot the three-pointer efficiently enough.
Right.
With this multiple ball handler approach that they're using, you need a guy like Archie who can either bring it up or play off the ball. Or you just need a low maintenance guy. So,
yeah,
I'm pretty confident they're going to be able to find an upgrade and find a guy that fits with what they're trying to do offensively in the free agent market.
I agree. Arch, I know, has a rabid fan base. To me, he just doesn't shoot the ball well enough consistently. He went for about a month there shooting it way below what's acceptable for a guy who's not really drawing much defensive attention, but. Regardless, he's a nice player and he's fine as a third string, but I want, one and two next year that going to really bring us to the next level.
Who do you like from that group?
Well, I love Beverly. Beverly, actually, I think his career three-point percentage is around 37%, which is a little bit better than most people would think. I love everything about him, his defensive tenacity. I love his attitude. He's from Chicago. There's so much I love about him. I love Rose, too, but my issue with Rose is LaVine is so poor defensively, and have Rose and LaVine in your backcourt, I think you're asking for trouble defensively. And that's part of my frustration about Dunn is he's so good defensively, or he can be. But, he doesn't shoot it well enough. There's just all these kind of little things about some of these players. I just think when LaVine's your two, you got to have a guy who's at least average to above average. And I don't think Derek is there, defensively. I love everything else about him. I mean, I love Derek Rose. I'd love to see him come on a team and be the force off the bench. But, I can't recall in your article if you talked about that. It sounds like you would prefer Rose to any of those other three I mentioned.
No, I was having some fun. I mean, when I wrote that, I more wrote just kind of big picture about how great of a story it would be just the renaissance that he's having. But no, you make a good point about the defensive concerns because, you need a lockdown defender that can also, like I said, you need a guy who all he does is defend, distribute, and knock down three-pointers. That's all you need.
Yeah.
And you need a guy, and that to me is where Dunn has regressed the most this season, is he has been, he pounds the ball so much, and he probes in the mid-range, and then delivers the ball late to guys, and they're not, you need a guy who just catches it and just passes it,
Yeah, so. I agree. It's so frustrating, because I was at the Indiana game, and I'm like, all right, this is it. You're starting to see it, and I think he has shot a little bit better almost on every metric, but then his decision making lately and on that West Coast trip was just an abomination. I don't know what was going on, and that's what I'm, I don't know what he's got going off the court. I keep on hearing that stuff. I know he had a child and how difficult that can be, but I mean, hey man, you gotta get it together here, and it's a shame, but I agree. We need to upgrade that position. Let's move on a little bit on the fan base, which, as an aside, I don't know if you knew this. I'm sure you do or heard it randomly. I'm very bullish on the Bulls. I'm definitely on the light side of the C-Red force, where I believe there's a massively positive future for this team. But I point to the major moves. You look at the major moves since 2017, the trading of Butler, the drafting of Markkanen, the Nico trade, the drafting of Wendell Carter Jr., the Holiday trade, the Porter trade. All these moves were wins to me, yet the palpable anger with every one of those moves, almost with the exception of Holiday, it's insane. It's not commensurate with what they're doing. Do you sense this anger? And is this the worst it's been in all the years you've been covering the team?
Yeah, I absolutely sense the anger. And to answer your question, it absolutely is the worst. And part of that is just because of the world we live in. So everything's amplified now, and everything's intensified by social media, and everything's, you know, vitriolic in the moment. I mean, when I was covering the Floyd era, none of that noise existed. So, you know, obviously it was a bad product, and it was lean years and bad basketball, but you just didn't get the daily engagement and feedback that you do now. You know, and obviously that's all that stuff's for the most part a good thing, because it means there's interest, fan interest, reader interest, so that's good for media. It can be a little overwhelming at times, but it is the angriest I've seen it, because just of the element of social media. I remember when management signed Dwayne Wade, I was going on a Miami radio station, and they, you know, he's such a revered son down there that they were asking me, why doesn't it kind of have like the same positive buzz up in Chicago? You'd think, you know, with him being from there, that there'd be this like great reception and excitement around him. And I said, well, it's not Dwayne's fault. It's just every move that is made is a prism into management, and fans hate management. So they, by association, they are immediately skeptical of Dwayne Wade. You know, it's like, so that kind of, you know, dovetails with what you're talking about, these moves that are made, that there's just immediate negative reaction to it. And then ultimately, you know, the Butler trade would be the biggest example. That was so widely panned and just intensely criticized. And I think everyone would recognize that, especially with the way he's playing lately, Markkanen has multiple all-star potential written all over him. So, you know, we'll see. I think I made it pretty clear, because I get, you know, at least one question in every mailbag I do, you know, is ownership going to fire management? It's pretty clear that ownership has faith in the roster building ability of this management team. They did it with the Kirk, Dang, Heinrich era, and then they did it with the Rose era, and this is the third crack at it. And obviously the season has gone off the rails because of all the injuries and the coaching change, but there's the way Levine and Markkanen are playing right now, and what Carter showed you before he went down with the thumb injury, I think, and the Porter, you know, initial stages of the Porter trade, I think there's, like you said, there's a lot of things that are trending in the right direction for the rebuild.
Yeah, but it's a shame, though, because I don't think – why do you think there is so much hate? I mean, I point to Tibbs getting fired, and I think that firing was completely justifiable. I think that guy had lost the team, and his minutes, you know, with Noah were just absolutely ridiculous and led to a severe decline from a guy that was once first-team All-NBA to, you know, minimum contract player. Do you think that was the turning point, or did you notice it before? Because when you step back and look at what they've done, they've been fantastic in drafting, absolutely fantastic, elite, much better than most teams outside of possibly Oklahoma City and Golden State. And I've liked a lot of the free agent signings they've had. You know, people argue they've never had a free agent signing. Paul Gasol was he made All-NBA. How many free agents are signed as a free agent, make All-NBA and take less money to go there? I mean, it's not based in reality, a lot of this anger. Do you concur, or do you kind of disagree with my points?
Well, I mean, you know, I personally think there have been more hits than misses. There are always going to be misses. As far as where the anger started or why it started, I would say that the Thibodeau saga played a crucial role in it, because obviously Tom was so successful in the regular season, and was so and developed such an identity with that team that fans latched on to him. Another thing that's happening is, and you know, if you're a supporter or not of management, what's happened is they've reached their expiration date for a lot of fans. Not a lot of management teams get to be in one place for, you know, close to coming up on 16 years. Five coaches, I think it's five playoff victories, maybe six playoff series victories. And that's what fans now are railing against from my perspective. But you mentioned the drafting. I would agree with that. And, you know, I that's what I've said before about some of the free agents. Even the 2010 free agency.
Fantastic. You know,
I don't think you can fault them for that. This management team gets criticized for being conservative. They traded Kirk Heinrich for nothing just to chase those guys. That's a pretty bold move.
They gave
up
a number one pick. They gave up a number one pick to get rid of him. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and number two, when that didn't work, you know, say what you want about Carlos Boozer, people didn't like him. He was, you know, starting power forward, putting up double doubles for a 62-win team, and then they filled in pieces nicely around him. So, you know, fans are obviously going to have whatever opinion they want, and that's their right. And look, they haven't won a championship. It's been 16 years; they haven't won a championship. So,
yeah.
I get why people are impatient and upset at times, but. There are definitely franchises out there that would like to have made some of these moves that this management team has made.
Amen. Hey, Casey, you've been more than generous with your time. To wrap this up, just two more real quick ones. Number one, you think I personally believe that keep holding on to Lopez is a good move. I think he helps Lauri Markkanen's development and it doesn't hinder it. I have good friends like Sylvie from Waddle and Sylvie who will counter that if Laurie's everything we expect him to be, it doesn't matter. What do you think about their decision? It looks like they're going to probably hold on to him, and correct me if I'm wrong, or do you feel like there'll be a buyout? And do you think that would be the right decision?
Well, I mean, what are you at? Right decision in terms of hurts your chances to get the number one pick, or what?
I personally think I think they're pretty much locked in at four, and the way the lottery has come down now at 10, you know, they're going to be picking between 10% and 14%. To me, the development of Lauri Markkanen is more important than picking, you know, a 10% chance at Zion or a 14% chance, and I think Lopez helps in that development. Do you disagree with that? Do you feel like, hey, we should buy him out and really go for the tank, embrace the tank, which obviously would be much easier with Felicio starting?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, here's the thing, like, if you embrace the tank, are you icing Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen then? Because they're the two best players right now. So that's my point, like, where do you draw the line? So, like, I personally am in favor of keeping Lopez just because, you know, I understand the math and I understand you want to maximize your odds, what have you. But to me, getting LaVine and Markkanen playing at this high of a level for this long of a stretch is important. This rebuild is still centered on a lot of what you have on the roster and those guys reaching their ceilings and maximizing their potential. And if you're trotting out a starting lineup of, you know, Felicio, Harrison, Seldon, Archie Diacono to purposely lose games, I just find that damaging.
Agreed.
So,
amen.
Yeah, so, and I understand how transcendent of a talent Zion Williamson projects to potentially be, but, you know, I just feel like, where do you draw the line? So, I personally am fine with keeping Lopez.
And the last question to wrap this up, I had an article on NBC recently, the top five most underrated Bulls. I don't know if you saw it. It's when you get a minute, I encourage you please to check it out. I thought it was a brilliant piece of work, although pales in comparison to what you do. Who is your most underrated Bull in the Jordan era?
In the Jordan era? Okay, there's a qualifier I wasn't expecting.
Sorry.
In the Jordan era. No, that's fine.
So the last 35 years, going back to 1984, I mean, or you can just say from the period where you covered the team.
No, I would throw out two possibilities. I would either say Cartwright or Kukoc. But I think Kukoc was a Sixth Man of the Year winner, so I'd probably go with Big Bill. He was so crucial to that first three-peat, not only for, you know, he didn't put up a lot of big numbers, but his screen-setting ability, his ability to rebound in traffic, his physicality, his toughness, his leadership. Yeah, he really was so important behind the scenes to those teams. And I just feel like you know, people would kind of mock his shooting style and his speech because he's got, you know, the throat surgeries and stuff. And right. I just don't ever feel like he drew the credit and appreciation for what he meant to those teams. And, you know, Jerry Krause openly would talk about how, you know, crucial that trade of Oakley for Cartwright was. And obviously another move that was really widely ridiculed at the time and angered, obviously, Michael Jordan because Oakley was his bud. So I'm going to give a little love to Big Bill and go with Cartwright.
It's fantastic. I had Kukoc number two on my list, so that was another
good pick. There you go.
Yeah, and I think he kind of sacrificed his game a little bit for the other two superior players, kind of like Bosch did in Miami. But regardless, hey, KC, thank you so much, man. It was fantastic talking to you. Your work is fantastic. Anything you want to pub specifically, other than, you know, your great work at the Chicago Tribune, anything that's coming up that you want to let the listeners know about?
I assume we're publishing the Tribune tomorrow, so please buy a copy.
So, no television appearances or anything on the horizon?
Nah, I'm just happy to be on your podcast.
Oh, you're the best, KC. Thank you so much, my man. I really appreciate it, and look forward to reading you every day. You're the best. Thank
All right,
you.
Enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on.
Everyone, KC. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.